Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode. It's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. So being that it's Monday, Aftershock Monday, I'm going to be talking about 8 different number one titles today, various Aftershock series that are going on. Maybe one of them will catch your interest and you'll be able to check it out. I think Aftershock is a really great publisher. I think they're highly underrated. I think they come out with some very inventive and quality stories that maybe wouldn't work elsewhere. So always encourage you to check out Aftershock's solicits and check out their series. They're always interesting. So let me go ahead and get to the book. It's called Undone by Blood. It is written by Alani Nadler and Zach Thompson. They are the writers and co-creators. The art is by Sammy Cavella, who is also listed as a co-creator. The colors are by Jason Wordy, and the letters are by Hassan Otsmane Elhau. I should also mention that Undone by Blood is or has been optioned for a TV show, and I think it would work really, really well as a show. And I look forward to seeing it picked up by somebody and being able to watch it on the small screen. I just love this title. It's one of my favorite Aftershock titles that has come out recently. So it starts off and it says chapter 3, actually. And we're getting basically some prose here. And it's a Western. It's a Western novel. The main character of the Western novel is Sol. And it's talking about how he's riding across the barren plains of Arizona, the sun following wherever he went. As if trying to chase an intruder from its home. And what Sol is doing is he's looking for his cattle. His cattle have been stolen or released from their pen, and he's out there and he's trying to rustle them up. We also learned that Sol has killed his first man when he was 14 years old. He stopped his first train robbery a month later. He's taken down so many bandits, he hoped the line between him and them had not blurred. So it's clear that Sol is, someone of experience. When you think about a Western, you're thinking about the old gunslinger type that is really experienced and tough. You know, think of, like Clint Eastwood in the Man with No Name films. Somebody who's kind of seen and done it all, real tough guy. As Sol finally finds his cattle and, is able to herd them back to his home, the day's almost come to an end. He's been in the saddle all day. It says he felt every hour of it in his body. And from the moment he set out that morning, he felt in his gut that something was off. And now that he's home, he realizes that he's been set up. It says he'd arranged enough ploys to recognize the signs and realize for the first time in a long while he was on the receiving end. So again, these first few pages were basically being read the dialogue, or we are reading the dialogue, the prose of a Western novel, as I said, but we're being seen or shown rather those scenes that are playing out in the prose as well in some great art. That the color work by Jason Wordy really, it's kind of washed out tone. It's got almost a sepia tone so that you kind of know when we're reading scenes from the novel as opposed to seeing things that are happening in real life, so to speak. So Sammy Cavella, co-creator and artist, just does a fantastic job, between the horses and Sol himself, the prototypical cowboy, the vast plains, the sunset is done very well. Jason Wordy's colors, very vibrant reds and yellows. So just like when we're reading the narration of that prose, when the characters speak, we see that as well. And the typeset that Hassan is using is very unique as well, really showing off the fact that, again, this is prose. So Sol gets home. As I said, he has that feeling that he's been set up, and sure enough, he finds his wife and she says, "They took our Marion. I tried to shoot him." And he tells his wife to hush. He's been wounded. And His wife says he said his name was Jed, and that's all you that you needed to know. He said they're taking Marion to Flagstone. He said something about hidden gold, and that's pretty much all Saul needs to hear to know that who has taken his son and where they were taking him, and you know, clearly he knows this Jed person. A couple things to note here: given their son the name Marion is interesting. For those that aren't aware, John Wayne's actual real first name was Marion. So I don't know if that's a nod to John Wayne or not. And the other thing, the Jed they refer to, we'll find this out in a couple pages, is actually Jed McKay. Now, there's a comic creator named Jed McKay. And I feel like he's of that sort of the same generation that Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson are. So I wonder if this is if they know each other and this is a nod to him. Or it could just be a coincidence. I don't know. But anyway, as we get to the bottom of that page where Sol's wife is telling her husband what happened and trying not to succumb to her wounds, we get a word balloon with some regular-looking speech, a regular-looking word balloon. It's not sort of the tan-colored word balloons with the font that looks, you know, very much like typewritten words that indicates the prose. And the voice says, all right, chickadees, next stop, Cuthbert. And we pull back on the next page and we see that everything we've seen so far was Sol and his wife and their son having been kidnapped and such is all in a book, a Western adventure called The Shadow of a Wanted Man. And it's being read by a woman on this bus. And again, the bus driver says, next stop, Cuthbert in good old Arizona. This is your stop. Grab your belongings. We ain't coming back. The rest of you all got 10 minutes to smoke them if you got them. And if you don't, then stay on the bus. So we see this girl who was reading the book get up and walk out into the sunshine. She's got some boots on. She's got a t-shirt on that says Lou Reed. Apparently she had a bike on the bus as well, a 10-speed. She has a cowboy hat. She has a very close cropped blondish hair, and it definitely looks hot. And being the fact that I live in Arizona, I can vouch for that. It's very, very hot here. So she walks into the bus station and she opens up a locker. She puts a bag in there and puts the key in her boot to keep safe, and then heads for a little bit of a grocery store, I guess you'd say, kind of down the road. And she picks up some rubbing alcohol, a sewing kit, some matches, and some water, some zigzags for cigarettes, and like a Swiss Army knife. And interspersed while she's grabbing all this stuff, and as she heads toward the front of the store to pay for this, we do see she has a gun in her waistband, in the small of her back. But what's interesting is as we see all these things, in the panels that are kind of at the forefront, in the background of this page, covered up by the other panels of her being in the store, we see a man laying on the ground, and we see a boot with some gold spurs, and we see those spurs cut the man's forehead with blood flying, and him screaming in agony. And it's kind of clear that these are memories that she has. And the fact that it's grayscale that these memories are in, except for that spur, which is gold, and her father's eye, which is red. I don't know if that means anger or blood. That gives the impression that's what clues us in to the fact that these are our memories. So it's a very interesting visual take. You know, I almost compare it to when you're watching a TV show or a movie and you get those real quick flashes of somebody remembering something traumatic. It has that feel. So great work by the art team there. So she goes up to pay for her items, and she asks for a pack of cigarettes, and the man behind the counter asks for her ID. She gives it. Apparently her name is Ethel Grady Lane. And in her picture, which it also says she's from Portland, Oregon, in her picture, she has this long kind of flowing reddish hair. And the proprietor even says, "You're much prettier with long hair. What brings you to town? You know, most kids your age don't come out to the middle of nowhere, Arizona. My guess is your daddy's going to start working at the paper mill pretty soon." And she says, "Nope." And he says, "Okay, well, then you must be passing through on your way to Tucson." And she says, as she's paying him, she says, "I'm here to kill the man who murdered my family." And he doesn't respond to that. He just has this look of surprise on his face. I mean, what do you say to that when somebody tells you that? So she walks outside as she's rolling a cigarette to smoke. And that transitions to us seeing Saul. We're back in the world of the novel. We're back in the world of the shadow of a wanted man. And Saul is rolling a cigarette. So that's that transition from one page of seeing Ethel rolling a cigarette. We're close up on her fingers and the paper with the tobacco. And then when you turn the page, it's that same scene, except now it's Saul's hands and Saul's cigarette. And he's telling his wife who's laying in bed, I don't want to leave you. What if I don't make it? And she says, we don't have a choice without marrying, you know, living ain't much living at all. So don't bother to come back without our boy. And well, Saul takes his leave and he says, you know, I suppose I should be off before midday. And as he's walking out the door, putting his hat on, his wife asks him about the gold they were talking about. And he says, it's nothing but a myth. And he packs up his saddlebags and he heads out. And we're told that for the first time in years, Saul knew what he was riding toward. He'd run into Jed McKay once before, but back then he was nothing but a delinquent robbing stagecoaches. But now apparently he has this gang, and kind of ruminating on the fact that it seems Jed already knew that Saul had changed. So the advantage was Jed's, but it makes no difference. Saul knows he was riding toward trouble, but you know, for the first time in a long time, at least he knew what he was riding towards, right? Because, you know, we saw earlier when he was riding, trying to round up his cattle, how he was, you know, he hates riding just for the sake of riding and not knowing where the end destination is. So at least now he has a mission. He has a reason for what he's doing. And we turn the page. We see Ethel is riding away from the convenience store, the gas station there. She's putting the book, storing the book back in her bag, and she's riding off. And that's part of what I love so much about the narrative that Nadler and Thompson have created here. She'll read part of the story, right? And then she'll put the book away and in a modern way, do things that Saul is doing. You know, we saw, you know, early on, the first chunk of the book she read was, about Saul learning that he needed to go to take his revenge. And then we see her getting to this town about to take her revenge. We get back to the book. Saul's riding towards something, knows his final destination. And as Ethel puts the book away, after getting her supplies at this convenience store, this gas station, now she's on her bike and she's riding toward something. So we see her eventually get to a town called Sweetheart, population 8,231. She parks her bike. She walks inside a bar and saddles up to the bar and asks for a beer. And the bartender says, "What kind?" And she says, "Whatever's fine. You got some ID on you?" And she says, "It got lost." I said, "Well, then it's about time you do the same." So this is strange. This is a little strange to me. I'm not sure exactly what the point of this is, because I'm pretty sure in 1971 that Ethel could have gotten beer at a bar in Arizona, right? She's 18, and I'm pretty sure that was the drinking age back then. So I'm not sure. She must have had a reason for doing that. But it's not clear. But anyway, she tells the bartender it got lost. He says, "And it's about time you do the same." And she goes walking out of the bar. So she heads down the street to another bar called the Vagabond Club. And before she can quite get there, some guy comes out of the bar that she was in the first time and says, "Hey, wait up, darling. Heard you can't get a beer in there. Huh? I got something better. Ever fly with the angels?" And being that this is 1971, he's talking about angel dust, and she just ignores him, keeps walking, and he's not real happy about that. He's like, you could have just said no, bitch. But she's moved on. She's walking into the bar next door, which is the Vagabond Club, and she goes up to the bar. She orders a beer. Bartender says, "Sure, no problem. Here you go." And then she's kind of taking the lay of the land as she's drinking her beer. She's, you know, eavesdropping in on different conversations of people. And it's clear that this is sort of a rough and tumble town. You know, this isn't a sophisticated place. But she does hear one particular table, a real loudmouth guy at this table. And he's saying, you know, I've been living in Sweetheart my whole life. More things change, more they stay the same. A Yankee running his mouth like that, it's no wonder that guy got his head kicked in. And that gets Ethel's attention. And so she walks up to the guy and she says, hey, you said you lived here your whole life? I'm hoping I can ask you some questions. And he's kind of taken aback, like, about what? And she says, well, about the murder at the Red Sierra Motel. It happened just over a year ago. And he kind of laughs. He lets his guard down a little. He was kind of perturbed at first, like, who are you, little girl, walking up on me? And so he says, ha, there's not a soul in town that don't know about that. It was a mess. It closed the highway for days. Family of five got caught sticking their noses where they didn't belong. And the way I heard it, the whole thing started with an argument about a soda and ended with the daughter getting away, screaming bloody murder down the highway with her face all cut up. And Ethel interrupts him. That's not how it happened. And he's going, look, if you know how it happened, then why are you asking me? Why are you interrupting me and my friends? What, you know, why are you bothering us? And Ethel says, well, I'm not asking details about the murder. I'm asking if you know anything about the people who did it. And that gets their attention, right? And they stare at her real hard. And he says, if I did, I would have called the cops. You're starting to get on my nerves, girl. And she kind of relents for a second. She says, I apologize. I just mean, doesn't a smart guy like you have his ear to the ground? And the guy's like, okay, all right. Well, you know, theory is the daughter set it all up. Girl's been something of a myth around here. You know, she was after the inheritance money. And now we see the look of disgust on Ethel's face. And she says, you know, you sure talk a lot for a man who knows so little. I guess there's nothing going around in that big head of yours but bullshit. And now it's on, right? Now this guy's like, you know what? Just because you're a girl doesn't mean we won't beat the ever-living crap out of you. You say one more word. And Ethel hesitates just a beat, and she gets the first shot in. But, you know, this is a full-grown guy. He's been around the block. Ethel's not exactly a big girl. And so it's not too long before they him and, you know, this loudmouth and his two friends start beating the crap out of her, got her on the ground, kicking her. And bartender yells, hey, you know, take that crap outside. So they toss her outside, like literally toss her outside, take her bag outside, dump it out, find out that she's, you know, just a kid, according to her ID. Loudmouth takes all her money, saying, well, that's a hell of a lot of cash. The other guy takes her gun, and they say, well, all right, well, we got to get out of here. And Ethel's left to just sort of bleed there in the parking lot. So it's not too long before Ethel sees somebody come walking out and literally just steps right over her, carrying a bag. It looks like just some sort of plastic bag. And he's got those same boots on that we saw earlier with that flashback, you know, that visceral flashback when she was in the store buying her supplies, where we saw those grayish boots with those gold spurs that stuck out in her mind. And this is the guy that just stepped over her on his way to a motorcycle. And she kind of croaks out, it's you, come back. And the guy drives off on the motorcycle. So we turn the page, we're back to Seoul, and he's making camp for the night. He's managed to kill himself a rabbit, and he's not really hungry, but he knows he needs to eat. You got to enjoy your meals when you can. And he thinks, well, you know, the thing is about dodging bullets, it's always easier to do on a full stomach. So he's far enough away out of town, it says, to think about the fact that the only thing in every direction was nothing. And that's just a great line, you know, and you got to hand it to Nadler and Thompson for this prose part of the book. The fact that it's not just, you know, I'm glad they just didn't write it as prose. It's not just an info dump. It's not just words on the page. They're getting their artists to give us something, you know, to awaken something in our imagination. They're illustrating the prose novel for us, and it's great. And the colors are great, and it's it really adds something to the book, but they're still writing it. The actual sentence structure is still such that it's very reminiscent of a novel, with phrases like this: Soul was far enough out of town that the only thing in every direction was nothing. I mean, I love that. So anyway, he's sleeping out there. He gets accosted by some bandits. As he's laying there trying to sleep, he's thinking about, he's a bit domesticated. It's been a long time since he hasn't slept on a mattress with a spring, with his wife's body beside him every night. And he wakes up with a gun barrel in his face. We turn the page. We're back to present day. And obviously, Ethel knew something like this could happen. Maybe it's what she even expected to happen. So she's dumped some rubbing alcohol on a cut above one of her eyebrows. And she pulls out the sewing kit that she bought, threads a needle, uses the matches to sterilize it. And she's literally stitching up her own face while she's kind of camping out by some trees. And she's thinking about how she should have brought some aspirin. And before too long, we see the lights of a police car come up, and the police officer walks up to her and says, "Young lady, I'm going to need you to come with me." And we get the "to be continued." So again, we're being told two stories here. One is the story of Soul in the prose novel that Ethel is reading. And then obviously we're also hearing the story, or being shown the story, of Ethel trying to get revenge, apparently, for her family that was killed. So I love the fact that it's set in the 70s. I love this dual narration. By setting it in the 70s, you're giving it an early 70s at that, 71, you're giving it some freedom. You're giving it some nuance. Just a certain kind of feel of a little bit of the Wild West. You know, it's not the 1880s. It's not that Wild West. But, you know, the 70s, before the information age, when things were a little more loose, you know, especially in a place like, you know, Backwater, Arizona, you know, Sweetheart, Arizona, population 8,000, you're going to be able to get away with a lot of things then, you know. And when you think about a lot of the movies and the art that was being created at that time in the 70s, it had a real distinctive feel. And I think that's exactly why Nadler and Thompson set this story at that time. It gives it that feel. It's very reminiscent of the movies and the stories that were being told at that time. And so it's one of those situations where if you are sort of into the aesthetic, that 70s aesthetic, then you're going to get sucked right in to this. And having the dual narratives, and clearly something in Ethel is kind of responding, or is being fed by the book that she's reading. She's being inspired. She either sees herself in Soul, or, you know, takes him as a mentor, you know, kind of a passive mentor on the page. And all those ideas are fascinating to me. So, like I said, this is one of my favorite Aftershock titles that have come out in a long time. In fact, when I went to reread issue one to do this episode, it had been a while since I read it. And even though I'm caught up on the title and I needed to get this recorded, I had to immediately go and read issue two, because it just wanted to. It's that good. Like when you read one issue, it immediately makes you want to read the next. You just want more of the story. It's paced extremely well. It's, you know, the chunks of the story you get are compelling. And it's one of those things, you know, like potato chips. You can't eat just one. You can't read just one issue of Undead by Blood. You want more. I'm absolutely not surprised, even the slightest bit, that this got optioned for a TV show already, to put it in another medium. And I think it will work really, really well. And I can't wait to see it in that other medium, because you're really hitting on all cylinders here with this creative team, from the work Hassan is doing with the lettering, which, you know, sometimes letterers, it's always an important job to pace the dialogue and to make sure you're reading it at a certain pace, to be sure it's not covering up the art. You know, they're kind of unsung heroes. I talk about it all the time, but a lot of times they don't necessarily have a lot to do creatively with the story, right? There's technical aspects they have to get right so that the story and the comic work correctly, but they don't always get to have fun and be kind of creative. Hassan here, he does, because of the different shaped dialogue balloons based on, is it a prose part, or is it, you know, kind of the, we'll call it the live action part where things are happening in present time. Is it prose where it's just the narration, or is it the prose where the prose characters are actually speaking, and then their word balloons look a little different. So he gets to play around. He gets to have a lot of variety here. And it's a very original idea. I'm sure for him, it's a nice change. So again, I think it's done expertly. Pick up this book. It is absolutely spectacular. It is so good. If you like Westerns, if you like kind of crime noir revenge stories, you're going to like it. If you just like good stories, good comics that are very brilliantly done technically and are kind of original ideas, like there's something here for everybody. So I really highly recommend this. So I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, as I've been doing on all these 12 days of the Christmas episodes. Happy Hanukkah, whatever it is that you celebrate. I hope it's a joyous season for you and all your family. Please be safe out there. Be responsible. And let's all look forward to a better 2021. Where we're not all stuck in our homes, and hopefully, you know, next year at this time, we'll all be celebrating Christmas with friends and family, thinking back on how terrible 2020 was, and how grateful we'll all be to sort of be able to spend time with friends and family and good company. So I want to thank everybody for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.